Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Coach,
Colonel Jessup!
Did you guys instruct Tavon Austin to fair catch the punt at the end?
Did you order the code red?
That's a situation where the...
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question.
The school thought this is absolutely fair catch in that situation. It's the returner. You know, he has that in his mind, and he has an opportunity to go make a play. We certainly encourage him to do that.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
Was Tavon told to fair catch?
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Fair catch was a very viable option.
You can't handle the truth!
The Tavon thing, they've gotten caught.
We use words like honor,
process,
code,
standard,
loyalty.
Jesse Holly tweeted that he found out it was Keith O'Quinn, the special teams coach, who told Tavon to fair catch.
Lieutenant Kendrick ordered the code red, didn't he? Because that's what you told Lieutenant Kendrick to do.
It was O'Quinn who called the code fair catch.
Goddamn right I did!
Well, Bobby, it was an interesting start to the week following that Sunday meltdown, and so many questions about Jason Garrett and how he handled that game. We had him here on Wednesday at the Star in Frisco, and I went looking for answers. Here's how it went.
Do you consider yourself a good game manager?
Again, that's something we strive to, as players and coaches, and certainly in my role, absolutely. You always try to learn from your experiences and do it really at a high level. Have we been perfect every time? No. Are we constantly trying to get better at it? Absolutely.
On that Tavon Austin situation, did you feel like you guys mismanaged not personally communicating, you yourself, with him on that play? Because as we've talked to a few folks, it sounds like Keith O'Quinn didn't give Tavon Austin that option. It was, in fact, fair catch.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into the Minnesota game. I'll address this situation. We should have done a better job communicating with him. In that situation, you want to err on the side of fair catch because you don't want to spend a lot of time, pulling time off the clock by having a return that gets you 5 or 6 yards. So you want to go in with the mindset of let's fair catch this thing around midfield and give ourselves a chance. Okay, the discussion should have been more complete and saying if you get into a situation where you do have a low kick and you can go north and south quickly and gain yardage, do that. We didn't communicate well enough with the player. Okay, that's on all of us. It's on me. It's on Keith. It's on every coach, every player involved in that situation. We didn't do a good enough job.
Have you talked to Tavon Austin personally after all of that?
Absolutely.
Conversation go?
Yeah, he understood who should fair catch in that situation.
Did you guys communicate that you perhaps didn't communicate well with him?
Yeah, I communicated that with him very directly.
All right, so in the room for that exchange today and who has been following this storyline as well as a lot of the Dallas Beat reporters is Dallas Morning News reporter Michael Gelkin, new to the beat this year. You can follow him at Gelkin NFL, and I feel the need to spell that for you, at GEHLKENNFL. Thanks for joining the show. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad I'm part of the Cowboys beat. Nobody told me it was this much fun. I would have been here earlier.
Now, for fans who aren't familiar with you, Michael, where did you come from?
So this is my 10th season covering the NFL. My first 7 seasons were covering the Chargers in San Diego. And then with their 2017 relocation, had to go somewhere else. There was not much future being an NFL reporter in a city without an NFL team. So I started covering the Raiders in Oakland, did that for 2+ seasons. I was there for some of the Antonio Brown fun, and then Dallas Morning News brought me aboard in August. So I missed all of training camp, missed bulk of the preseason, catching up to speed, and it's a pleasure to join you. Thank you for having me.
You're a glutton for punishment. You know, you went through the Chargers ordeal and then Oakland Raiders and Antonio Brown and now all of this. What do you make? We'll start with today. What did you make of Jason Garrett and the issue of accountability this week?
Well, on the outset, I should say, I think being the Dallas Cowboys head coach comes with inherent challenges where it's a little different here. You have the owner who's on the radio twice a week. You have his son, the VP, who's on the radio twice a week. And you, as the head coach, coming off of a Sunday night game, are on the radio Monday morning. And without getting ahead of ourselves in terms of accountability, I think he's done a pretty good job of taking, making sure that he says that this is on me. You know, I'm the head coach. He takes pride in doing that. It seems a habit for him to do that. But when he was asked about a fair catch on Monday morning after a Sunday game, I don't think he had all the information when asked. And so his answer there, I think, was one that he was kind of set up to fail. He didn't handle that as well as I think he handled it later in that press or later on Monday at a press conference setting, and certainly as well as he handled it on Wednesday today.
That was my takeaway, Michael, because when we had that walk off with him, you know, we sort of walked him through this, and I wanted to make it a point to Jason that the reason why I was asking the questions is so often the national media will hurl Molotov cocktails in the direction of this organization, and few of them pick up the phone and actually talk to the people involved. It's really easy to do it from afar, right? Mm-hmm. And so I take this beat pretty seriously, and I try to be as responsible of a reporter as possible. And, you know, after Jesse Hawley first broke news that it was Keith O'Quinn that actually made this call, not giving Tavon Austin the option to fair catch or decide to run this north and south. And I heard that players were frustrated with this. I felt like it was important to sort of get to the bottom of it. And my sense was the same as yours. And it's a quick turnaround. All of us are sort of a little groggy after a night game. And when you're on the radio and you're not only getting asked about that, but the second and third, the third and two, why did you kick the 57-yard field goal to open up the game? He had a lot of questions that he was having to address. But I thought by 4 o'clock, he should have at least had a few more answers, especially, Michael, when I asked him, was this a situation where, you know, Keith O'Quinn's not on the headset, you know, talking to the head coach during this, that you didn't run down there and talk to him about this, a crucial play that could have sort of your Hail Mary in this game? And he said, Keith O'Quinn was standing right next to me. I thought that was interesting that then it took him time to go to a meeting, talk to him, and then he finally caught up with Tavon. And even when we brought it to his attention today, he didn't seem to understand the weight of putting this on Tavon in the sense that Tavon had an option.
If it wasn't for the radio interview on Monday, the landscape of this topic is different.
I agree.
And Garrett, during that Monday interview, and I know in the intro, which was awesome, by the way, during that radio interview, he indicated that Tavon Austin had some license on that play. Fair catch it or not, you have the ability to make a decision to fair catch it, or if you think something's there to go north, you know, to go straight ahead, do it. And I talked to Tavon on Monday, and he said, no, I was told fair catch. He said that he didn't even look to see where, you know, what the proximity was of the nearest cover man to him as a returner, because he knew what his responsibility was on that play, which was to wave his hand and signal fair catch.
That's interesting. And he didn't say much more when we caught up with him today. Here was our exchange with Tavon Austin in the locker room.
Tavon, what did you see on the punt return play? And obviously, fair catch. Was that the instructions the whole time?
What day is today? Wednesday?
It is Wednesday. Yeah.
I'm done talking about it.
Did you
it's
have
a frustrating situation?
I'm done talking about it.
Hey, you don't have to talk about the play, but you think the Cowboys trying to throw you under the bus?
I'm done with that. It doesn't really matter.
Garrett did tell us that he had a conversation with you. Do you at least feel comfortable with that conversation and what was discussed?
I definitely feel comfortable with it. And just between me and him, and I'm done with it.
Appreciate it.
And again, I just want it, for the fans that are thinking that we're getting into the minutiae of this, I want to explain why I think this is important. Mm-hmm. Tavon Austin is beloved in that locker room. He's sort of like this team mascot in a sense that everyone, I was told that everyone on defense as well as offense loves that guy. And there were a lot of guys that put their hands up and said, that loss is on me. I should have done this. I should have done that. And while we were listening to Jason Garrett over the course of Sunday night and two radio interviews on Monday, it seemed like he was the only one that wasn't really putting his hand up. Now, we miscommunicated at the end, fine. I just, and he said it today, you know, and I tip of the hat to him. Perhaps he didn't make it clear enough. And I think he made it clear enough today. But my concern was, when I was covering this and talking to people, these players have stood on the table for Jason Garrett. And I believe that's why Jason Garrett, through all the twists and turns here in Dallas, has maintained his job. You lose that locker room, you have a problem. And if you start throwing players under the bus and call a player out when he's messed up, we saw that with Tristan Hill. We saw that when Antoine Woods was late to the meeting. But in a situation where you've told a player to do something and he's taken a hit, to me, it doesn't matter the outcome of the game, whether that would have translated into anything that would have been a win or loss is, to me, not important. What is important to me is you can't have a coach throwing a player under the bus. And what I wanted to hammer out today, and I think we got to the bottom of, I think he inadvertently did it.
Right. And I think, so Garrett speaks on the radio. He says, there's some license there that Tavon Austin can return or not return. And then Garrett learned over the course of the day, because it was just a Sunday night game, oh, when I said, you know, to Keith O'Quinn what I was looking for in terms of how I wanted Tavon to handle this punt return, Tavon did not get that message. So Garrett learns that after the radio interview. He probably should have, and I think this is kind of the point here, based on how he represented the situation publicly earlier that day, when he had his next opportunity to speak about it publicly after having spoken to Tavon, having spoken to Keith O'Quinn, having spoken to other special teams coaches, all he said was there was a miscommunication on the sideline. I think indicating, I took from it that it was a coaching issue, but you probably want to be more direct after having said what you said in the morning, just to make sure it's clear that Tavon did what he was coached to do, and we as a staff did not properly convey our expectations on that play to him.
I also think that part of this was just a miscalculation on Jason Garrett's part as to, I think he was trying to protect everybody involved. And, you know, he didn't want to throw Keith O'Quinn under the bus. I don't think he wanted to throw anybody under the bus. And so I think probably when he looked at it and he stepped up there for that afternoon press conference, I could see him thinking of it as it saves everyone if you just say we communicated what's best and then Tavon just made the call and did it. And I don't think he quite thought through how that would then shift blame to Tavon. I think he just thought, you know, we gave him the option and he made the decision he thought was best. I don't think he thought of it in those terms as it was throwing him under the bus, but the other thing is, you got to remember, he's not talking about Tony Pollard not running back a kickoff return. He's talking about, you know, a 6-7 year veteran. Dede Westbrook in Jacksonville wears 11 and, you know, told everybody that the reason why he wore 11 or whatever it was Tavon Austin, that he looked up to Tavon Austin. And that was, and so he's got a lot of respect in the league with players. And so I honestly think it was just a miscalculation. I'm sure there are some hurt feelings in general with a lot of people. I mean, Tavon Austin on Monday looked upset, like looked bugged when we saw him in the locker room. He didn't talk much. And so I think it was just kind of a miscalculation. The miscommunication that happened on the field seemed to kind of carry over into the locker room this week in terms of how they then dealt with it. And, you know, I think that airing this out a little bit hopefully will help them move on from it. But, you know, I think it was that there was a lot that they can learn here for future scenarios.
And Michael, I want to get your sense on this. I'm not saying that the guys haven't taken losses seriously in the past, but this one feels heavier this week. Even talking to Travis Frederick today, talking to Zeke, it feels heavier. Is that your takeaway?
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair way to describe it. I hadn't really thought about it much in terms of the terms, but now as I kind of think about the feeling there. Yeah, and I wonder if it's because of how they lost. It was a little bit of a reversal there where they weren't the most physical team on the field, where it was the other team that was pounding the run 10 straight times in the second half down their throat on a touchdown drive. They were not in sync, and it's not just like execution where, you know, against the Jets, you know, you have a cornerback who bites on the double move, and then the safety isn't at the right depth to help over the top. It's this, you know, we're talking about a fair catch with, you know, some miscommunication before the play, and then even the next day, some communication that we're discussing. There's 10 men on the field on the first quarter. Dalvin Cook, you know, you can see Jalen Smith is aware of it. Certainly Leighton Vander Esch is aware of it. There's no three technique. The Cowboys are a four-man front, 4-3 team, and yet they have three down linemen. No timeout. They end up giving up a 30-yard play on a drive that culminates in a touchdown. And by the way, Robert Quinn gets flagged for a 14-yard rough from the passer on the play. And these things matter. And so for that, again, I think just the way that they lost too, it was an unusual game. You know, we've talked about number of losses this season. This was their fourth, but the way that they lost, the conversation today is much different than it has been in those other three.
I think this is a very similar feeling to me as it was around the time last year when they made the move and they fired Paul Alexander and they traded for Amari Cooper. That was around this time, 8 games in a year, where it was just kind of like, man, this seems bleak. And then they put it together and they go on that run and everything's all right. I wonder if maybe the weight of this is just sticking with them a little bit, because it's like, we know there's no Amari Cooper trade coming in here to save us this time around. This is just, we're dropping the ball. We're letting ourselves down. And I think after the Philly game, when Dak stood up there and said, we're going to handle success better this time around, and you know, this isn't going to be an issue, and we're going to a couple games in a row, and then the first contender they face, and it's the same issues. I just think there's the weight of this, maybe just a little looking internally at themselves and saying, man, maybe we're not the team we thought we were.
And I would ask you this. I asked John Machota this week earlier. I said, do you think this team has good players?
I do.
I think it's a top five roster in terms of talent as individual players. Now, how they mesh as a team is another thing.
All right, so I'm going to lead you down another path. Jason Garrett this week said that he wasn't calling the plays. That was Kellen Moore. Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard are handling the defense. Mm-hmm. He said he had nothing to do with the special team stuff, essentially, even though he said they could have done a better job at the accountability aspect of this. And so my question is, if they're not getting ready to go early in the game and they're getting behind, what is Jason Garrett doing? And I say this as someone who has defended Jason over the years. I believe that the guys respect him. They like the process. They like the consistency. But when he was answering some of these questions on Monday, I found myself going, so what is Jason doing?
Yeah. It's tough because this league is so week to week. We're not that far removed from what they did against the Eagles in prime time, where, you know, and then that was the best example of a fast start. There have been too few of them, to your point. Just the overall week-to-week inconsistency. And we talked about the play where they had 10 men on the field. That contributed to, you know, a quote-unquote slow start. And those types of things where Christian Covington, I talked to him today, and he said he was running on the field. Vikings were in no huddle. He didn't see anybody rotate off. Apparently the lineman had rotated off by running around the offense, and so he wasn't in his direct line. But those things that are happening, it's hard to say that, you know, that's Jason Garrett's fault, but certainly the fact that they didn't call a timeout, your procedures should be in place if you're, you know, facing a team, you're there in the no huddle, you got 10 men on the field, and every play counts. Yeah, I think that does point to coaching. So it's hard to make, for me, especially without the reference point of previous seasons, as someone who's on this first year, so I'm just taking it game by game.
That's why I think you're interesting, because we've got our jaded beat writers that we've had in here, but this is a guy that's coming from the outside looking in.
Yeah, so it's to be frank, I, before I got here, was aware of just the general temperature surrounding Jason Garrett here, where, you know, I could hear from Oakland before I made the drive to Dallas the beating of the drum of Jason Garrett's potential firing, and that's been beating for years here. But I didn't know firsthand, and I've kind of wanted to wait and see for myself what exactly the coaching situation is. And overall, I've been impressed by Jason Garrett. I think he does an excellent job of managing people. That's something that I heard from former colleagues before I got here. He's extremely adept at just managing people. That being said, I thought this was the first game that I've covered where it just seemed like a number of areas, you know, were mismanaged as it related to situations on the fly, game management, and then ultimately kind of how to handle, you know, the press and player relation as related to Tavon, which are things that matter when you're the Cowboys head coach. I think, again, empathize with the challenge of Sunday night game, Monday morning talk. That's not something a lot of head coaches do around the league, is talking so soon after a Sunday night game. And I think it's a little unfair for Garrett, who was unaware at the time that Tavon Austin didn't get the message that Garrett wanted to be received that about regarding a fair catch, possibly returning that. So I don't know. I think it's one game of the nine that they've had. But to me, this is the one where it just seemed like coaching was at the forefront of some of what went wrong here.
And I wonder if, you know, when we talk about how weighty this loss is, because it's like you said, colleagues telling you that the Jason Garrett especially is as a people manager and just a steady hand. And, you know, they talk so much about the process and you know, routine and getting into those things. And because he is such a steady hand, I wonder if that's why this loss isn't so jarring, is because the area where Jason Garrett usually is so steady, he's kind of dropped the ball this week. And so it just kind of leads to some, you know, just general instability among the personnel. I mean, that's not unusual. You know, when dad comes home and you're used to dad being a certain way and then he loses temper or something, like, I mean, that can send the kids kind of like, you know, what's going on? It leaves a little unsettling feeling. I just wonder if maybe that's also got something to do with it. Or, you know, this team knows that their results, and we talk about how much Jason Garrett means to a lot of these players, their results are going to directly affect Jason Garrett's future and what his job status is.
Yep.
And so I wonder if the weight of that, and the more they lose these games and the further along it's getting the season, they're feeling the weight of we're starting to jeopardize his job.
And we went to Travis Frederick and asked him very specifically about that. And here's what he had to say.
Travis, I ask you this because you're one of the veterans on the team, but fair or unfair in losses, coach and quarterback typically take a lot of heat on Monday.
Unfair.
Has the criticism of Jason Garrett this week been fair or unfair as a player in this locker room?
I don't know exactly what was said there, and I think it's unfair generally to single anyone out in this game. I think it's unfair to single coaches out. I think it's unfair to single players out. I think it's unfair to single out groups, offense, defense, special teams. You know, this is a team game, and team extends to more than just the players. It extends to more than just the coaches. It's everybody. It's the front office. It's the whole deal. And when you have losses and when you have wins that aren't good, you know, it comes down to everybody. And it comes down to everybody working together, everybody communicating well, everybody doing their particular job. And sometimes breakdowns happen because people are trying to do other people's jobs too. You know, it's not necessarily that people are slacking off or not doing their job well. Sometimes the problem is that you're trying to do too much. And I think we've seen that. I don't know if necessarily this game, but throughout the course of the season, you see that people want it so bad that you try and do something, you do something wrong because you're trying to do too much and help too much. So it's a little bit of everybody, and I think it's important that we share the accountability for that.
Is this team still confident in your head coach, Jason Garrett?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've done well, you know, throughout my time here with him, and I don't think there's any reason to believe that people don't have confidence in him and what we're doing. I think we know the level of player that we have on the team and also the level of men that are in here and are working. And you can face adversity with groups like that. You know, you've seen that in our group. It's not when things aren't going well, nobody turns down. Nobody says it's over. You know, it's always a fight to the end. And I think that's it's the way that we're coached, and two, it's the level of men that we have in the room.
You brought this up too. Your perception of Jason Garrett based on what everyone has told you and being an outsider, and then your perception of him coming into this building. When he was in that walk-off today, mm-hmm. and we continued to sort of ask him all these questions, what I respect about him is that he answered them. Not all coaches do the walk-off. Not all coaches have to sit there and answer some reporter's questions about how he handled a game, right?
Right.
And I think that's what I respect about him. And I think that's always the hard thing for me is when people say, well, you know, get rid of Jason, people wanted his head. And I think a lot of people misinterpreted that exchange that I had with him today. I actually wanted to give him the opportunity to do what I knew he would have done normally. What I've come to know is take accountability for situations, and something that he didn't do on Monday, and that was perplexing to me.
Yeah, I think he just misread the situation on Monday in terms of not just misreading what Tavon understood to be the circumstance in terms of what he was supposed to do as a returner, but misreading how it had been perceived, not just by fans, the fact that Garrett said one thing on Monday morning and then Tavon had said something different, but in the locker room, you know, when you see, you know, as a player, as a teammate, how Tavon feels about a situation and what he was told, what he says he was told, and then you hear the head coach say something that isn't representative of that, there's friction that can come from that, and that can be a problem. I thought in the walk-off that we had with Jason Garrett, he was adamant, blame me.
Yep.
The fault is on me. If I created any other impression, then I'm the one responsible. That's on me. But let me be clear, it's me. And so I thought the accountability that you're characterizing, I heard that too, felt that too, that was something that Garrett, if that wasn't out earlier this week, that would be a problem to him because he understands how important the locker room is to him. He's been an NFL coach far too long.
And a player
to think anything less. And so that would be a misstep that he does not want to take. And so he wants it out there that, hey, it's on me.
And I it drives me nuts because I know the fans, like I said, they only were able to see a moment of that exchange. But that's why I wanted you here. You were there for that. It felt authentic to me. It didn't feel like a guy that felt like he was covering his tail after the fact. It felt authentic.
No, and I think another thing to point out here is Tavon Austin, when he re-signed this offseason, that was a little surprising to me. I didn't know where exactly he fit in on this team. And then he ends up making the 53 again. And I remember I texted somebody after that had happened. I was, you know, surprised. Tavon's back, you know, and they texted back and they said, juice. And then they sent a follow-up text and they said, Jason loves his juice. Jason loves Tavon Austin's attitude. You know, usually you'll get a starter called up to lead the Jumping Jacks. He calls Tavon up. He loves Tavon's energy. Everybody in that locker room loves the energy. It's not so much, I don't think, what he does on the field. I think he's a glue guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think, you know, for those who wonder about this, I don't think Jason ever wanted it. I think it was just a screw up. And I don't think Jason ever wanted to do anything to, you know, throw one of his glue guys under the bus. I think that's one of the last people in that locker he'd want to do that to, because he does have such a respect for what he brings to the locker room culture. And also the fact that he is one of the few veteran players in that locker room. There's a lot of guys on their rookie contracts still in that locker room. And Tavon Austin's been in the league 6-7 years now. And Jason is a longtime NFL guy, somebody who's been in the league, grown up around the league, everything like that. I think he knows better than that. And so I'm sure he's kicking himself.
Yeah. Well, now that we've spent most of our time with you on the controversy that wasn't the controversy, your thoughts on this team heading into the weekend, especially when we look at more injuries to this offensive line, kind of the surprise injury to Connor Williams on Monday and having arthroscopic surgery. Now we've got Xavier Suofilo filling in, but lingering issues for Zach Martin and Lael Collins.
Yeah, and we're going to see over the course of the week what these guys can do. On Friday, we'll learn what their game statuses are for Sunday versus the Lions. But this is a banged-up unit regardless. You know, you lose Connor Williams. I'm not going to say that's not a loss. That would not be respectful of a second-year player who's grown a lot since last year. He's gotten a lot stronger. His understanding of the game is getting better. But he's still a fairly young player whose combo blocks or other aspects of it, he just hasn't quite been as consistent as the Cowboys would want. And so I'm eager to see what Xavier Suofilo makes of this opportunity. He started several games last season. Eager to see how he does here. So that, I think, is going to be interesting to watch. And it might not just be this game. You know, coming off an e-scope, could be multiple games. I think that's fair to expect. And then Zach Martin, he's been invaluable. But you see what he's been battling through. It's been pretty constant. If it's not the back, it's the ankle. If it's not the ankle, he bangs up his right elbow in the fourth quarter, does not miss a single snap. He's the rock to that unit. I mean, he and Travis Frederick, and it's an incredible unit, but Zach is just so steady. And then Lael Collins, the back has been an issue for him all year. So we'll see what these guys do, but at least Cam Fleming is back. The calf issue oddly came during a bye week practice when it was as light as can be. I mean, it was Cooper Rush, and all these starters are out, and Cooper Rush is leading the first team offense, and then you hear that Cam Fleming got an MRI today? Today, of all days, he got a calf injury and he misses multiple games. So, you know, for the Cowboys' sake, hopefully they're not without their right tackle. But if they are, it certainly helps having Cam Fleming back in the mix.
I heard that was Keith O'Quinn's fault. He tripped Cam Fleming like walking into a door.
Poor Keith O'Quinn.
Yeah,
poor Keith O'Quinn. One fun fact about Keith O'Quinn.
Yeah,
I really respect getting to know him. I did a Jeff Heath article and he was fantastic talking about him. You know, and Heath is just such an underappreciated guy in this building, just the way people value him. There was an onside kick playoff game last season, and he suffered a shoulder injury on it because a player collided into him.
I remember that.
Had off-season surgery.
I don't know if I knew about the off-season surgery. I didn't know that he did.
No, you know,
knowledge bomb.
They've had bad luck with coach and personnel injuries, because you remember a couple years ago, then we had Will McClay tore his ACL.
Keith O'Quinn collided with him.
Keith O'Quinn was on the sideline, and then he got collided into.
And O'Quinn had the surgery.
Yeah.
And so that's
I'm pretty sure. I hope I'm not misrepresenting it. I was told it was like, you know, it was a conversation, not off the record, obviously, but like we're talking, and yeah, he got banged up on that. So
final question for you here is, we're just wrapping up. Given your impressions of this team through the first several weeks that you've been out here, mm-hmm. and your read on this team's DNA and their mental makeup, sitting here at 5-5, things, you know, outside of just this issue that has come up with Tavon and just the way things are playing out on the field, do you think they can make this a rallying point for themselves and come together and go on a run the rest of the season? Or you know, is this not the type of makeup you think that – is this the type of team, basically, I guess, that will wilt, or you think can come together and try and use this as a rallying point for themselves?
I don't know if this will be the source of the rally in terms of that game or mm-hmm. any aspects of it. But I think they know what time it is, where you are a team that's been inconsistent now for a couple months. You've got 5 wins and you're tied in the NFC East with an Eagles team that has, you guys have seen that December schedule.
It's ugly. It's like Murderer's Row.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For the Cowboys and for the Eagles, they have 3 games against the Giants and Redskins and a game against the Dolphins, and then play these guys week 16. So if the, you know, the Cowboys are probably the best chance of Philadelphia not going 5-0 in December. And so you've got to get hot. You want to be playing your best football in November, December. The time is now. And so I think that is maybe what gets guys going. It's just knowing it's time to show up. Like, you've had things, and it's been maybe coaching here, but it's certainly been mis-execution there, a whole lot of that. It's time to get this thing going, because the Eagles, you know, they're going to win some games. And it might not be this week against the Patriots or next week against the Seahawks, but after that, they're going. And you guys have botched opportunities. We as a locker room, they should feel, have botched opportunities to provide separation to this point. So you got to get going now.
But I'm telling you, you haven't covered this team a lot, but it's a very Cowboys thing to do. To make the easy part hard and the hard part easy.
I would beat the Patriots by 3 touchdowns.
I'm telling you, this is the type of team that it would not surprise me if they were capable of turning this thing around. So I'm not ruling anything out, but this definitely feels like they are in the trenches right now.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time. And again, if you want to follow, go ahead and give us your Twitter handle so I don't have to spell it out again.
It is Gehlken, NFL, G-E-H. The H is tricky. Mm-hmm. L-K-E-N.
We appreciate you so much jumping on here. You can follow him on Twitter for all of his content on Dallas Morning News, and we hope to have you back.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Joining us now is Dave Burkett. Dave is the Detroit Lions beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. He is also a Pro Football Hall of Fame writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Burkett. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing great. So the top topic on everybody's mind, I know you were out at practice on Wednesday. Is Matthew Stafford out there practicing? How's he looking? And what do you think the odds are of him actually playing?
Yeah, I think the odds are probably pretty slim right now. Stafford did not practice on Wednesday. Matt Patricia did not offer an update whether he's going to practice later this week. You know, he sort of said that, well, you know, they would review that as the week went on earlier this week. But look, you know, he's dealing with broken bones in his back. And last week, doctors wouldn't clear him to play. They said it wasn't safe. They didn't really determine the exact extent of his injury until Friday after practice. I just have a hard time believing that a week later it's going to be safe for him to play. The Lions have a big investment made in Matthew Stafford, and certainly he wants to be out there, but they're not going to take any risks with their quarterback.
You know, we talked to Matt Patricia here on this Dallas media call, and I asked him, you know, what does Matt Stafford bring to the football field? And he said, phenomenal player, extremely tough. His confidence elevates the play of others. So what does Jeff Driscoll, the backup, bring to this offense?
He's still a bit of a mystery. I mean, look, he's only been in town for 2 months. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, he started with the 49ers, spent the last couple of years with the Bengals, made 5 starts there this year. And, you know, really, when the Lions brought him on board after he was released by the Bengals, we all kind of just chuckled at first, because he's the 7th different backup quarterback that the Lions have had in town. So it was sort of a situation where all right, they're trying out another one. Let's see what he can do. But I'll say this for Jeff Driscoll. You know, he's a guy that he adds a little different element to the offense in terms of his athleticism. You know, we saw last week that he could run the football a little bit. The Lions kept rolling the pocket out, trying to give him some extra time to utilize his strengths as an athlete. So I think they, you know, the offense will be about the same with Jeff Driscoll at quarterback, but just tweaked a little bit to fit some of his skill set.
Now, take me back for fans that aren't familiar. You said seven backup quarterbacks. Yeah. What time frame?
All right, so we're talking since the end of last year. They signed Connor Cook as a futures guy. They brought in Tom Savage in the offseason. Those two guys spent most of the offseason with them. You know, they traded for David Blau, who's the number three quarterback, right at the at roster cut day. They also had Josh Johnson in here briefly and Luis Perez in here briefly for, you know, less than a week Perez was. But really, this is an issue that the Lions have known for a long time, that they've had some issues at the backup quarterback spot. They kicked the tires on some different backups this offseason, didn't have the money that, you know, that it was going to be necessary to go out and spend and sign a veteran. So they've been looking for an answer for that backup quarterback position, knowing that Matthew had some back problems last year, despite being an Ironman, knowing that they wanted to upgrade that situation. And really, they didn't find an upgrade, I guess, until Jeff Driscoll came aboard in September.
I saw you tweet that they're actually, Matt Patricia confirmed that they are going to be present for the workout of Colin Kaepernick this weekend. Do you think that's a legitimate avenue they might explore if Matthew Stafford's out for an extended period of time?
You know, I don't. Color me skeptical on that one, I guess. I mean, I just, you know, they've had opportunity to sign him before. They've shown no interest in him before. Certainly, you know, Colin Kaepernick's skill set might fit Daryl Bevel's offense a little bit more with the, you know, the athleticism he brings to the position. But, you know, number one, I think, you know, Stafford will be back here in a matter of weeks, you know, probably not this week, but maybe before the end of the month. And then two, this is just an organization that doesn't like to deal with any type of distraction. And for whatever, you know, you think about Colin Kaepernick as a player, there's no doubt that off the field, the amount of television cameras, the amount of questions, everything that would come with signing Colin Kaepernick, they would view that as a distraction. So I don't think the Lions and Kaepernick will be a fit at the end of the day.
It's so wild when you consider seven different backup quarterbacks and Jeff Driscoll's your guy, and you've got a workout with a guy that was a starter in this league and says he's still been working out. And I, you know, that's an issue that I think a lot of teams are bringing up, not unique to Detroit. All right, so let's talk about this team, and maybe this isn't a fair question for you, but in the absence of Matthew Stafford, obviously you've got Jeff Driscoll starting, but it seems like the Cowboys and Detroit are similar in the sense of, what is this team?
Yeah, you know, that's a question we've been asking with the Lions really since the start of the season, because, you know, we all, I think, went into the year thinking that this was going to be a really good defensive team. And, you know, the way they finished last season, they were one of the best run defenses in the NFL over the final, you know, 8 weeks of the season, really after acquiring Damon Harrison. They went out and spent big on Trey Flowers this offseason, you know, brought back two-time Pro Bowler Darius Slay. You know, if there were any questions going into the year, it was about the offense, and it's really been the complete opposite. Stafford, until he got hurt, was playing at a really high level this year. Obviously, Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones having big years, and the things that the Lions haven't been able to do, run the ball, stop the run, really stop anything on defense, and that's been the head-scratcher. So I think there's, you know, there's probably some legit reasons for that, just some of the injuries they've had on defense and the slow start that some of their key defensive linemen got off to, just because they were, you know, they didn't take part in training camp and they were dealing with injuries a lot of the summer. But really, that's been the most puzzling thing about this Lions team, is why they haven't been able to get things done defensively. And for that matter, why they haven't been able to get a running game either, though, with Kerryon Johnson out right now. I think that's less of an issue, why I think everyone understands that they're sort of playing from behind the eight ball there when it comes to running the football.
Do you think there's any benefit at all here, just in the last couple minutes that we have, do you think there's any benefit at all for Detroit that while they may be playing with a backup quarterback and while there may be, you know, some struggles on defense, there is at least maybe this advantage of, you know, Bevel's familiarity with what Chris Richard likes to do on the defensive side of the ball, having, you know, both of them been in Seattle?
You know, I don't really buy that. I mean, I think it cuts both ways. You know, Chris obviously knows Daryl too. And look, you know, if you don't have your starting quarterback, you know, maybe last week, maybe, you know, the Lions caught the Bears a little bit off guard early. not Chicago not knowing what to expect with Jeff Driscoll at quarterback. But we saw they made some quick adjustments. I mean, the Lions got off to a real quick start, drove down the field for a long field goal drive, and then they couldn't move the ball much after that until the very end of the game. So I don't think so. I think, yes, these, coordinators know each other fairly well, and certainly, the Lions and Cowboys played each other last year. So from a personnel standpoint, they know each other. But to me, the Cowboys are just a better team right now, healthier and better overall.
Obviously, it's Wednesday and we're doing this interview with you, and a lot can change by the time we get to, playing on Sunday. But if you had to realistically put your pulse on players we can expect, players we can't expect, who would they be?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't think Matthew Stafford will play. I think probably better off or better bet that we see him later this month. The other injuries, I guess, for the Lions, they've got a couple guys in concussion protocol. Never know with that. But the Lions' history has certainly been that guys coming off concussions get the next week off. That's Ty Johnson, their rookie, who's replaced Kerryon Johnson as a starting running back, and then right tackle Rick Wagner. So I would expect that neither one of those guys plays. Tracy Walker, their best safety, has missed the last two games with a knee injury. He did not practice on Wednesday. Probably going to be another week or so before we see him. The defensive line is a little more of a question. Romeo Okwara and Deshaun Hand both suffered injuries a week or so ago. The Lions are really thin on the defensive line without those guys. I think we could see one of those guys back, but we'll see later in the week as they get back to practice and see how. With Hand, it's an ankle. With Okwara, it's a groin. Especially in Hand's case, we'll see how that ankle does and if he can get up for Sunday.
Well, one of the things we like to do here on the show is we like to bring you the best beat reporters from the markets that the Cowboys are squaring off against that week, and there is no doubt that Dave Burkett is that guy in Detroit. So if you are out there and wanting to keep tabs on the Lions this week, Dave is your follow on social media at Dave Burkett. Dave, we appreciate you so much.
You got it, guys. We'll see you on Sunday.
Thanks so much.
Okay, so this is just the latest upcoming here, the latest in a long line of biggest game of the year for the Cowboys coming up here against the Lions. And the players seemed overly, overall pretty calm. There is a little bit of, they understand the weight of where they're at right now. But I think overall, they're not panicking. It was funny. Jordan Lewis very clearly heard the fan reaction, didn't quote anybody, but had just tweeted out, "Y'all lame as hell for panicking like this," which is pretty funny.
That's what we do. That's what the fans do. That's what Cowboys media does.
It's the norm. And so actually, I know you got a chance to talk to Jordan Lewis about it in the locker room.
To the outside world, the sky's falling when it comes to this team. You're on social media and you said y'all are lame as hell for panicking like this. Why was that important for you to put that out there to the fans?
I mean, it was just frustrating. Just understanding that, we the ones that's playing. It's not like we playing out there, just going around just doing whatever. We're playing, we're fighting our butts off. So it's kind of hard for them to, say, I guess, them watching to say, just to, I guess, subjectively say stuff like that about us. It's kind of hard.
Because the mentality in this locker room is what right now?
I mean, we just got to go out there and play. Honestly, we got to go out there and execute and do what we do. We can't be inconsistent. That's what that is. I understand that, but that has to come within, within us. So we just got to go out there and execute.
So no need for panic, according to Jordan Lewis.
All right, but the Cowboys and Lions do have some similarities in their struggles this season. Combined, Dallas and Detroit 6-0 this year against the NFC East, but are 2-9-1 against everyone else. So something's got to give. And if the give doesn't go the Cowboys' way, this thing's going to get ugly, and we're going to have another fire podcast.
Well, and if it's to follow the trend there, that undefeated against the NFC East and just two wins against everybody else, then Dallas would have to lose to Detroit this week. If we're just going to follow that.
I thought we were going to end on a positive note here, Bobby.
You're great. You do awesome things, listener. We appreciate you so much. I don't know. I can't spin positive. It's been a dreary week. I'm not going to lie. It's been a dreary week here at the Star. But, I asked Michael that earlier, of course. Do you think this is the team that can rally around? I really do believe in this team's ability to rally around each other and, their brotherhood that they have. And so I think they'll do it. I think they'll beat Detroit. And then when they beat Detroit, everybody will be, this will all be long forgotten and they'll just be focusing on New England.
And the forecast in Frisco on Monday, when I get back here from Detroit, mostly sunny and 68 degrees. Let's hope so is the pod.
What day is today? Wednesday?
It is Wednesday.
I'm done talking about it.